This is Christian of the Once and Future Nerd, and you're listening to the Audio Drama Production Podcast.
My name's Robert, and I bid you welcome to the Audio Drama Production Podcast. What's it about? I'm sure you already know by now, but thanks for indulging me. Quite simply, everything you wanted to know about making audio drama, but were too afraid to ask. But there's no resting on laurels here, dear friend. If there's anything we haven't covered yet, get in touch. The email address, as always, is podcast@audiodramaproduction.com. But I've already detained you long enough. On to this week's special feature. And I hand you over to the Matthew, who's more hunky than Mahonicky, and has better eyesight than Matt Murdock. It's Matthew McLean. Matthew was privileged to speak to Mike Mraz, who produces his son's show Aaron's World, a dinosaur audio drama. And that's not a reference to old-time radio.
So a big welcome to Mike, who is on the Audio Drama Production Podcast with a bit of a different take on things than we've had before. Welcome to the show, Mike. It's great to have you on.
Oh, thank you very much. It's my pleasure to be here.
So we got an email from your good self a week or two ago, and like I say, you're doing things pretty different from what we've spoke about before, because you're actually you've been producing an audio drama with your son for quite a while now, haven't you?
Right, yes. And actually, and other kids too. A lot of his friends have participated as well, so it's been fun.
So just tell us, like, how did that all come about? You know, where did the idea come from? And you know, where did you get started with it all?
Well, we actually got started with it accidentally. This started when my son was six, and he's 11 now. So we've been doing this for over 5 years. And I had been podcasting for about a year or so back when he was six. So he had seen me doing that a lot and wanted to give it a try. It was, you know, dad has the microphone and he's set up and he's talking and doing all this stuff. So he wanted to give it a try. So it was basically just a little family activity one Saturday. We had tried to come up with some ideas of something that he could do. It wasn't really working. So I thought, you know what? I'm just going to set up the microphone. We'll put it in the living room. You can just talk. Do whatever you want. Talk about whatever you want to talk about. And so he got excited about that, sat down. And we did that, and then he just recorded a little lesson about dinosaurs in his six-year-old way. So I thought it might be fun just to put a little intro and outro and some music and sound effects and, you know, just spice it up a little bit so that we can share it with some friends and family. That's pretty much how it started. Because I was already podcasting, it kind of got to the attention of some other people in my audience and people who are following me, and they shared it, and an interest started coming up in it, and we started getting emails from people says, is there going to be another one? Because we had constructed it in a way so that sounded like a podcast so that he could hear it as though he had his own podcast. But people liked it and they contacted us. So we made a second episode, and then we made a third one, and then we just needed to decide whether or not this is something we're going to do, or was it just an activity and just something for fun and we'll let it fade away. But he very much wanted to continue, and it was certainly becoming popular. There wasn't a lot of stuff for kids, so people were sharing it with their kids and they liked it. And those became the very first few episodes of our podcast, which is a little bit different than the rest. And it started from there. To be honest with you, the podcasting I was doing already quickly became overshadowed by this. There was too much interest in this Aaron's World podcast that we had created. And I just had to stop the other podcasting activities I was doing and just focus my time on this. And we've been doing that ever since.
So he'd basically hired you as his producer.
Yes.
So how long ago was that then?
Oh, this was in, I think this must have been in March of 2010. So yeah, over 5 years now. We should wrap up. This is a 50-episode audio drama, so we've always known that it has a definite end, and we're almost there this December, so it should probably be about 5.5 years total that it's taken us to produce this.
Is that the big spoiler? And when you're doing dinosaur stories, is that eventually they did all die out, and it has to stop?
Now, if we were just doing the Mesozoic, that might be a bit of a spoiler, but the way we've constructed this audio drama is that it's basically, it's entertaining, it's a story, but it's also educational. It's a tour of all of the Earth's past. So it goes through all of the prehistoric eras and creatures. So it's not just the dinosaurs. So, you know, the mystery gets maintained as to how this is actually going to end.
And it's really quite amazing that, you know, you say you've been doing it for, 5 years, and, you know, when you're a kid, you get into things and you lose interest in them fairly quickly. You know, you go through all these interests. So it's great that he's actually, you know, presumably he's really passionate about it. I mean, to be podcasting for 5 years, you know, most adults wouldn't be able to achieve that. So that's brilliant.
Yeah, Podfade was something was a very real possibility early on. And actually, I took some steps to prepare for that. One of the things that I did is that we immediately broke the podcast up into seasons. You know, because working with kids, I wanted to make sure that this stayed a very positive, constructive experience for him as well. So what I didn't want to happen is for it to just die a very slow death and eventually just disappear, especially since we very quickly had a large audience of kids, you know, that we're going to be disappointed. I think an adult can handle Podfade a lot better than a kid can. Even now, kids know that our story is about to end and we get the emails about what's next. We don't want it to go. Please continue. Things like that. So that was very real at the very beginning. So we divided it up into seasons so that if interest faded or for whatever reason we couldn't continue, we would have an ending point where we could let it end naturally before continuing on. Because I wanted him to have a sense of completion as well, to have done something, to put a lot of time and effort into it and feel as though it was done. Because setting a goal, completing a goal is how kids develop confidence. And, you know, that was important to me to salvage that and not let it just pod fade. So when we got through that first season, we had a natural exit. I talked to him about it. You know, do you want to continue? Do we want to move forward going through? And he was willing, and I had gotten a lot better at doing it. So we decided, okay, we're going to do another season. And then once we got to about the midpoint or something, we realized, okay, we can see this through to the end. But even then, I had to take other precautions because, you know, 5 years, even as motivated as kids are, other interests come up, different demands on their time as they get older. So what I did early on, once we got past the pod fade phase, the risk of that happening, is we actually sat down and finished this story about 2.5 years ago. I sat down with him while he was still motivated, still interested, and we mapped out the story in every episode all the way to the end so that if his interest began to fade, at least the creative content and the direction and the story elements were all written down that I could continue it and see it to completion. And that turned out to be a very good thing in some ways. And then in other ways, it was just unnecessary because as I took on more of the workload of this, his became a lot easier. And it's been easy for us to just to see it through to the end. But, you know, working with kids, those are very real things and we had to plan for them and prepare for them.
You're touching on a lot of the challenges that you face doing a show like this. What other challenges have you encountered and how have you overcome them?
Oh, just the demands of family life get really difficult. And, you know, so we get through that just by having a schedule and, you know, keeping to it, planning ahead, see if we can get an episode or two ahead or get some of the production work done ahead. We would record episodes. We would do a scripts well in advance and then record them in batches so that for him, he could come in and just kind of focus and we have a good recording session and he could be done for a while. And, you know, then the work would fall to me to actually put it together and to produce it. The same thing with the other kids that come in. We try to we have a young girl, Delaney, in our podcast who is in a lot of the later episodes. She's a very prominent character, but she's not his sister. She's just a friend and a classmate. So we want to be very considerate of their time. And so she would come in and we would just record all of her episodes, as many as we could, just in one sitting. So we would try to consolidate the workload into little pockets and spread them out so that it's more manageable for the kids. We never record more than 45 minutes at most at any given time. And the recording sessions when they come in, we especially with the other kids, we turn them into play dates. You know, we would usually have like little pool parties. So when Delaney would come over, Ezra, who's another a boy in the show, would come over, they'd come over separately. We'd record individually, but they do their recording and it was just part of a larger play date structure. So we're off to the pool and they're having fun. So hopefully when they remember it, you know, cause the recording in front of a microphone can be nervous for young kids. So even though there might be a little nervousness and it's a little bit of work, you know, as they're needing to focus and actually act out these lines, it's all done in the larger context of a play date and a pool party. And so it's fun. The other thing we did is, like I said, we broke things up into seasons so we can give ourselves some natural breaks. But we also shortened the episodes considerably. That wasn't necessarily a conscious choice, but it certainly is more conducive to working with kids. You know, there can be other audio dramas whose episodes can be up to 45 minutes or an hour. You know, they vary in length. But ours have always been, you know, anywhere between 10 and 15 minutes. So the amount of recording that the kids need to do is much smaller. And so those are just a few of the things off the top of my head that we needed to do. Just planning ahead, putting some thought into the recording sessions, spacing things out, having a different release schedule that's longer. We release once a month. A lot of things like that add up to just being much more manageable for kids so they can come in and focus and not be overwhelming.
And are the kids... Are they taking influence from other audio dramas? Are they listening to any other stuff at all?
No, actually, many of them don't even know what podcasts are, or at least not in a firsthand experience kind of way. So they started when they're really young. I mean, Aaron, when he was six, and I think Ezra started probably when he was eight or so, and Delaney when she was eight. So they're still fairly young and maybe not necessarily with all the computer access or the internet savvy that, you know, that we enjoy. So they were kind of coming in a little cold and understanding what an audio drama is, what it was they were going to be doing, and, you know, just describing it as a play that's going to just be recorded, people will listen to instead of see, is kind of a nice way for them to understand. But what I would do is I would let them hear some of the earlier episodes so that they can see exactly what is going to happen. But no, they're kind of coming in with a blank slate. They don't have the same experience and understanding of what's happening as an adult voice actor.
Well, they're coming in with a fresh perspective, so I suppose that, you know, it leaves it wide open for what they might throw up there eventually. So I don't think there's any harm in that at all at this stage. What are some of the benefits, do you think, of working with kids in audio drama then? There's presumably you're seeing a lot of benefits for them educationally and socially.
Yeah, actually one of the benefits are going to change. For example, the other kids that we come in, their involvement is much more limited. So the benefits to them might be a little bit different. But my son Aaron, obviously he's much more involved. He created this, so he's going to have a very different experience. And for him, you know, one of the benefits of this is, like I had mentioned before, just a sense of confidence. You know, for young kids, set a goal, work to complete it, and that completion builds confidence. So every episode that we get done is a confidence builder. It's like, I started something, I worked on it, I finished it, people are enjoying it. And after you do a few of those, it, you know, you feel good. We feel good as adults, and kids feel good as well. They have a sense of accomplishment, especially when you're that young and may not always have opportunities for things like that. But just the process itself of an audio drama is just really an excellent tool for kids. One of the reasons when we sat Aaron down with that microphone for that very first time, the reason he did what he did was because he was in, I think, kindergarten at the time. And he had just had an activity at school, which was called their habitat project. And what the kids had to do is they made this little display in a cardboard box and however they wanted to do it. And they were to depict a habitat for an animal. They pick an animal and they do a little report and everything. You can think of it like a kindergarten version of a science fair, project where they describe what they learned about this habitat and these animals. So when he went in to talk about the first episode about dinosaurs, it was based a lot on that, and that's what he knew, and so that's what he projected when he recorded. And as we continued, what we realized is that each of these episodes, and ours is different. Ours has a goal of being educational. Not everyone might. But for ours, what we found is that every episode we did was like a little science fair. We'd have a new episode. We'd plan in advance what creature was going to be in it, what prehistoric creature. And then we went through a series of steps every episode where we would brainstorm. We would do research. We would write the script. We would act it out to do the recording, and then we would do the production. And he had to learn about what creature he was going to do, sit down and learn about that creature, identify the things that he wanted to share with kids, what he felt was the important part, put that together in a narrative that could be part of the episode, and then sit down and record and perform it. And then, of course, towards the end, you know, I come in with a lot of the production. But all the thought process of doing that made each episode like a little science fair, and drawing on different skills, you know, writing and researching and reading and performing and acting. And each one was just a really nice little educational experience. And it struck me early on as we were doing this is that we really were doing a little science fair each time. And that was reinforcing these learning skills that he had. So that's something that's always been in the back of my mind. And when we're done, and especially now that end is in sight, just in the back of my mind, it's still something I'd like to continue in terms of an educational tool. I have this concept of a series of podcasting lessons I want to do with elementary kids, where maybe over the course of two or three sessions, we can sit down and I can construct a series of activities and lessons where we can get some young kids to come together and put together their own episode of an audio drama or podcast as a learning tool. And I'm anxious to experiment with that, take what I've learned from doing this and see if we can do it with a group of kids and let them make an episode of something and see how much they learn and what they get out of it.
You talk quite a bit about the sort of background to putting the episodes together. What's it like, you know, what's a typical sort of bit of pre-show preparation that you do when it comes to recording day? What does that look like?
The preparation at that point, oh my gosh. For us, it gets spread out over a much longer period of time. What we've been doing is we've been functioning by seasons, and you know, we'll work on a particular season, and which I guess is not uncommon. And we'll get the scripts done in advance. So Aaron will do the research, and we'll identify the elements, put together the scripts. And then we have everything ready to go. We do read-throughs to make sure it sounds good. We try to have it in as final a state as possible. So one thing I learned working with kids is that retakes are sometimes impossible or very difficult to schedule. So we want to get it in one recording session. So we try to have everything as final as possible. And then we do a little a read-through, and then we sit down with them, let them know exactly what the episode's going to be about. And of course, with Aaron, he's already familiar. He's been through the process. And we sit down and we read through. Now, the one modification that we have, and I don't know how common this is in other podcasts. I imagine it is in some ways, is that we can never record with them at the same time. There's a variety of things that prevent that. So the kids don't have the luxury of hearing what the other kids have said or how they've said it. So as a producer dad, one of the things that I need to pay particular attention to is making sure that some of our extra kids have a good enough reference for how the lines need to be said. So I become that one little filter that knows how everything is said and make sure that everything is going to match in the end. So very often I will read the other lines, or even I will read their lines for them in advance so they can see, have a reference as to how it needs to be said so that it matches, and then they can copy that. It happens in a variety of different ways, but so that's the preparation for the kids that we can actually have in our home that are local to us. We do have a few others that exist in other parts of the country. Those are much more minor roles. But for those, and I imagine this is where it's very similar to other audio dramas, is you know, we need to prepare and send things out for a distance. So I work with the parents to make sure that they understand what we're doing, what the lines are going to be. I always send an audio clip with them of myself or Aaron reading their lines. So they have a little bit of a reference. They can listen to it and have an idea of how it needs to sound so that it matches everything else in the episode. And then we send that out, let them record, and kind of hope for the best when it comes back. And fortunately, it's been okay. But, you know, even those small experiences we've had of working with people from a distance, when I then later learned that other audio dramas, you know, do a lot of their voice acting this way, where everything is just shipped out, you know, at a distance and then comes back. Gives me a great deal of respect for some of the other guys doing this that have to do that from a distance, because that is challenging. So there's a little summary of how we record with the kids.
Yeah, the pitfalls of remote recording, it doesn't get any easier when you're all adults working together either. So right. But it's a great tool at the same time. But over the past 5 years, you've presumably built quite a fan base. What's the reception been like for them, and what sort of interaction do you get from listeners?
It can vary. First of all, we get lots of email, and sometimes we get emails directly from the kids. Most of the time, it's through the parents. Sometimes it's clear that the parents haven't listened to the podcast and they're just kind of. Their daughter or son is just like, now I want you to say this and send this out, and here's the address, and type exactly what I say. And so we get a lot of that, and we try to be very responsive to the kids. Most of the time when kids write in, Aaron will respond back with an audio message rather than just an email reply. And the kids really love that. We just want to make sure that if they're taking the time, and these are sometimes really young kids, 4, 5, 6 years old, we want to make sure that if they're taking the time to write in to us, that they have a good experience coming back, and they love, you know, for them, Aaron's voice is just this disembodied voice inside this little adventure they listen to. So when they get the audio response back with him talking directly to them, it's pretty exciting for them, and we enjoy doing that. And we hear a lot from a lot of the parents as well. Social media will get comments here and there, but you know, sometimes. It's very difficult for kids to write in because they're not the ones in control of the technology. So it's always hard to gauge exactly what the fan reaction is, because there are some barriers that exist in kids communicating with us. So sometimes our perception of the reception, has to just be on the numbers and the downloads and, you know, people resharing and telling other parents and other families about this, and then the ones that do write in. But, you know, all that considered, the response has always throughout the years just been very, very impressive. I'm just always surprised that there are as many people out there, as many kids out there that listen to us and want to provide feedback. It's just been very encouraging. And this stuff is hard. I mean, I know I'm preaching to the choir here in terms of how difficult and time consuming, you know, this stuff is. So there are times where me as, you know, producer dad, and I'm just drained and don't really have the energy for the next episode. And then I get the one little email from this little 5-year-old girl who just loves our character, Delaney, and the voice actress that does her, whose also name is Delaney. And those things just kind of re-energize me, and just like, it's just like a spark, and it's like, yeah, now I'm ready to go. Just if we make one little kid happy and they're just waiting and anxious for the next episode, and you know, that really makes a difference. So it's been a lot of fun. And the number one question we get is, how do we make the podcast? Because kids become very excited about what they're hearing. They realize that it's a kid their age that's doing this. So the first thing they want to know, and this is what I hear from most from parents, is my son, my daughter loves this. How do we do this? Because they want to do it now too. So eventually we did a little making of episode to throw in our feed so that kids can have an idea of how we put it together. They can try themselves. And many of them have actually sent in sample episodes of podcasts and audio dramas, things that they have done. Not all of them have wanted to share it, but they do share it with us on occasion. And it's always nice to see kids giving it a try themselves.
That's brilliant. I really enjoyed your answer there. You know, so many things to pick up on. The fact that, you know, Aaron's obviously a celebrity amongst his listeners, and you know yourself how profound the content, the fictional content you consume when you're young, when you're very young, it stays with you all your life. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that he's having so much impact, and people will remember that when they're adults. And it's also great, you know, for audio fiction, for audio drama, people growing up with this stuff, because it's you don't really hear about it that much now as kids growing up with audio fiction, audio drama. So much good work there that you're doing, and Arne as well. And I take my hat off to you, even though I'm not wearing one. I take my headphones off to you. What does the future hold? Like you mentioned, you know, that this show will probably end at some point, but presumably that won't be the end of you guys creating podcasts and creating audio dramas, will it?
I hope not, but I'm not really sure. This has been such a huge undertaking that I really need a chance to rest and just to see what we're going to be doing next. But one of the things that we were just talking about, fan feedback, and one of the other barriers is just the production itself. We don't have as much time to promote and advertise and you know, things like that, or interact with people who might enjoy the show. We had one opportunity where we went to Dragon Con and we did a panel presentation there on podcasting with kids. And that's actually when we won a Parsec Award for the audio drama 1 year. And it gave us a different sense of the people that are out there that are listening. And we got to meet many of them and they wanted autographs and things like that. It was just a really interesting experience. But it was very limited because so much of our time is just focused on podcasting and just putting together the audio drama. When this is done, one of the things that, and actually Aaron and I, we just had, we went out to dinner recently. We just kind of were chatting about this because a lot of the questions we get is, what are we doing next? And we realized that this audio drama actually, unlike a podcast, will have a life of its own afterwards. And that's one of the really amazing things that's different about audio dramas than just regular podcasts is that, you know, this may have taken us 5 years and may just be 50 episodes, but when we're done, the audio drama itself isn't done, because there's always going to be new kids that are ready to start from the beginning and listen because they love dinosaurs and they want to see this again. So we were talking about how, you know, you may be answering a lot of fan mail from kids as you get older, but still from younger kids as people begin discovering it again, and new audience, you know, the audience can be very cyclical and renew itself over time. So that's one thing that we're prepared for, is that this audio drama will have a longer shelf life and we'll need to kind of keep up with the fan community as new kids grow up and discover it. So that'll be one thing that likely won't end as we move forward. But as for new things, we're really not sure. Aaron himself is starting to get interested in video production, and he has a little YouTube channel where he's experimenting. He's learning how to do video editing and put together his own little things. He's old enough now to grasp that and to give that a try. We've had requests for our story, which is kind of fun. I'm very proud of the story. It's very much a little science fairy tale. There's an overarching story. It's which is educational as well, and it's a very cute story that we've put together, which promotes science and critical thinking. And I have had some comments from people asking if maybe we might ever turn this into a book as well, like a kid's book that they could read as in addition to listen to the audio drama. And so that's a possibility. And since our focus has been on science, you know, presented in entertaining ways for kids, we've just been thinking about maybe some other ideas we can do for podcasts. But I'll have to be honest, this podcasting with kids and this whole experience has just been very time consuming and very draining. And it probably will exist in a little bubble itself and have an end. But what we do next, not quite sure just yet. But they're definitely an interest. There are a lot of our listeners that do not want to see us go away. And we won't go away, but I'm not sure that another audio drama is in our future, but we'll see what other content we can do to share with kids. So more to come.
After all this time doing the show as well, it sounds like Arne must be an absolute encyclopedia of dinosaurs. What does he actually want to be when he grows up?
Well, like any other kid, that changes. The interest in dinosaurs is certainly still there. And yes, he probably knows. Doing something like this certainly reinforces that information, and he knows way more than most kids do. But his interests have since changed. He's a very, very science-minded kid, which is telling considering the audio drama we put together. You know, so he's moved on to astronomy and biology, a lot of non-dinosaur things. Went through a period of wanting to be a scientist and wanting to be a paleontologist. And I think maybe the whole production aspect of creating something, developing it, producing it, and then distributing it has created a little bit of interest in the production side of things, which he's taken an interest in, the business side of things, although, you know, ours isn't anything for money, it never will be, but there's certainly an exposure to like the business aspects of how this stuff all works that he's taken interest in. And I don't know where that's going to go. His, like any other kid, is those interests just keep changing with every new experience. And it's very likely whatever he ends up doing, he may not have even experienced yet. He's still very young. So we'll see.
Brilliant stuff, Mike. It's been a real pleasure to chat to you about this. Where can the listener find everything online then?
Best place to go is mydogrocket.com. And we have a dog. His name is Rocket. So there's the title. And there'll be links and everything in there. Episodes are available online, as well as links to iTunes and the RSS feed and everything like that. And actually, people, especially with kids that maybe not have access to podcast feeds because, you know, they don't always have smartphones or computers of their own, we have episodes that are just downloadable as well, so they can put them into their music player. And so a variety of ways for kids to be able to grab the content and be able to listen to it. But mydogrocket.com.
Thanks to Mike Mraz for taking the time to speak to us, and we're keen to hear more in the future about Aaron's world. Check out the links in the show notes. So, time for the mailbag. Let's see what abuse we've been getting this week. Ah yes, a couple of reviews on iTunes. The Boost says, great resource. And he's given us 5 out of 5. Informative and varied resource to learn all about the aspects of production. Lots of great guests. Thank you very much to The Boost. And Bob Teague says, my weekly must-listen podcast. 5 out of 5 again. And he says, if audio drama is on your radar as a possible way to tell stories, you have to check these guys out from episode 1. There isn't a wasted episode. Cheers, Bob. Joshua, creator of Lord Dinby Witherspoon, Duke of Space, says, thanks for the shout-out on the show. I really appreciate it. For your own edification, Dinby Season 2 is starting this Wednesday. Hopefully our second season improves on the first, especially on the production side. And if so, much of it is thanks to your podcast. So thanks again. Thank you very much for that, Joshua. And we'll be sure to check out Season 2. I've had a listen to Season 1. I just started listening the other night, actually. And I like it quite a lot. And I recommend anybody else to check that out if you like a little bit of sci-fi and comedy. Who doesn't? Austin Beach. He says, hey guys, I just wanted to let you know that I just listened to Time is Money. Holy crap, that was fantastic. I loved the sound of the time machine. I was listening with earbuds turned all the way up, and when the heartbeat came in over the time machine, I could feel it beating in my head. It was a very cool effect. Anyway, great job. Thanks for that, Austin. And Austin, of course, refers to a little audio drama we put together, a one-off called Time is Money. Check out some of the back episodes or even our normal feed, and I'm sure you'll see all the details there. We were very happy with the soundscape in Time is Money, particularly the time travel part and the transition from studio to field recording. That was very much intended to jolt the listener into experiencing a shift in time and location. Matthew, he often says he wants to try and somehow coin the phrase of the Dorothy effect, thinking of the transition from black and white to colour in The Wizard of Oz. Maybe that's a term that's already being used. Maybe it's a trope. Who knows? We could always Google it, but we've got better things to do. Anyway, email from Serge, a.k.a. Blast. I have discovered your podcast recently and have decided to start from the beginning. I'm currently on episode 11, and it is very good. I can't give you 5 stars as I'm not on iTunes, but you deserve it. Well, it's the thought that counts. Thanks for that, Serge. He goes on to say, as far as I'm concerned, I am a French guy living in Belgium, and I participate quite a lot as an actor, writer, and mixer on independent French-speaking audio drama. I am one of the administrators of the French forum, www.netophonics, and that's with an X, .com, and that gathers the authors, comedians, mixers, and auditors of these programs. He goes on to say, audio dramas in France and French-speaking countries had a very different history to the UK. Used to be very popular in the 30s, 40s and 50s, but then almost completely stopped being produced by radios, and the media almost disappeared from the mind of people, except the eldest. There were still some few books for kids with audio cassettes to play. I used to have a few of those. They played the story as they were learning how to read, but that was about it. Nowadays, only a very few, very short audio dramas are produced by national radio stations, and they are largely ignored by most people. However, a bit more than 10 years ago, some few guys decided to reinvent the media and started to tell stories with dialogues and sound effects and music. They were totally autodidacts. Now, if you don't know what that means, I happen to know because it came up in a quiz. An autodidact is someone who taught themselves. I think, yeah, pretty sure that's what it means. Again, I could Google it, but meh. They were totally autodidacts, although some had a bit of experience regarding sound processing or acting and basically made their creations from scratch, inspired by either role-playing games, movies, or video games. Yep, I know what you're talking about there. We've been there. Anyway, he goes on. The media was then rediscovered and more stories were written and played and mixed, and we started to be less confidential. However, although we are sometimes invited to some conventions to explain what we do, we keep on being largely unnoticed by the public, the radio stations and the rest of the world. It does not really matter. It is fun to make and fun to listen to, and we have a dynamic community ready to listen to the stories, comment on them, and give any kind of advice to help progress. On that aspect, it is great to listen to your podcast as it gives a very interesting perspective from a country where audio drama kept on being part of the culture, and where independent programmes may benefit, or suffer, from the productions that are still being broadcast by radio stations. I don't have much to add at the moment. I'll keep on listening to your podcast, and will probably drop you a line or two after I reach the number 25 or 30 mark. Thanks for the hard work so far, and keep up the good work. And if you or your friends are searching for an actor that can speak English, but has kept a certain French accent, I might be your man. Sorry. Regards, Serge, aka Blast. So, thanks very much for that, Serge. Very interesting, and there's certain parallels there, I think, with audio drama in the UK. I know old-time radio has been a big, big thing throughout America's history in the last 100 years, but there's not been tons of it in the UK. I mean, we've got the BBC, and they do a few radio plays, but they're basically just a couple of people in a room with very few sound effects, if any, and certainly not soundscapes like the sort of thing we're used to in our own little community. So yeah, very interesting, and hopefully we'll see it grow as a community together around the globe. So yeah, and thanks for listening, Serge, and get back in touch when you hear this in about a year's time. Get your way through the episodes, hurry. So that's about it. Let us know what you think via the usual channels. Let's see, we've got the website address, audiodramaproduction.com. The email, again, is podcast@audiodramaproduction.com. You can find us on Twitter, @YapAudio. Me, myself, I'm Rob Cudmore on Twitter. And we're always slumming it on the couch in the Facebook group, Audio Drama Production Podcast. So until next week, keep hope in your hearts and decent headphones on your ears. From Matthew and I, we bid you farewell.